Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. In today's episode, we spoke with Anthony Chi, MD, a staff pathologist, Monica Paravalli, MD, a medical oncologist, and Archana Jadhav, MD, a medical oncologist, all faculty at the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group in Maryland. In our exclusive interview, Drs. Chi, Paravalli, and Jadhav discussed the practical advantages and clinical implications of implementing in-house next-generation sequencing testing for patients with non-small cell lung cancer. Chi explained that performing NGS internally eliminates delays associated with specimen transportation and external laboratory accessioning, significantly shortening turnaround times. The panel emphasized the importance of close coordination between pathology and oncology teams in maximizing tissue adequacy, particularly in small biopsies and cytology specimens. Jadhav discussed the oncologist's role in ensuring adequate tissue acquisition, emphasizing proactive communication with pathologists and interventional radiologists. The discussion also addressed optimal timing for comprehensive genomic profiling in non-small cell lung cancer. As molecular reports become increasingly complex, the panel highlighted the importance of interpreting co-mutations, variants of unknown significance, and emerging biomarkers within a broader clinical context. Chi further emphasized the growing importance of newly approved biomarkers, including HER2 and MET alterations in non-small cell lung cancer. The conversation also highlighted the value of multidisciplinary collaboration and tumor board discussions in complex diagnostic scenarios. Finally, the panel underscored that successful implementation of precision oncology workflows depends on seamless collaboration among pulmonologists, pathologists, oncologists, interventional radiologists, and molecular laboratories. Okay, so starting off, what are the real-world advantages and trade-offs of implementing in-house molecular testing for lung cancer with respect to turnaround time, tissue stewardship, cost, and quality control?
Hi, my name is Anthony Chi, or Tony here. I'm a staff pathologist at MAP, Kaiser Permanente. In terms of for this question, that there are several aspects that we can discuss between sending the tissue out to an external vendor versus performing the internal NGS. The first aspect is the turnaround time. Of course, when you perform the NGS internally, you cut down the transportation. Because the tissue is already available in the pathology lab. You don't need to spend the time of transporting the specimen to an external vendor. Furthermore, you also cut down the processing time. In other words, when you send a specimen to an external laboratory, they have to take the time to accession the specimen to make sure that everything is in order before they can start testing. So all that time will be eliminated and they will dramatically cut down on the turnaround time. The other things I would like to emphasize is that when we were thinking about implementing an internal NGS testing, we purposely chose a different testing platform. In other words, when we look at all the external vendors, what we realize is that far majority of the external vendors, they use the Illumina platform. And so at that time, when we were thinking about bringing up our own NGS testing, we made a conscious decision in such a way that we decided to use a different platform that is different from the external vendors. And the advantage of choosing a different platform is that not only does it use a lot less of the tissue, of biopsy tissue, so the input of the tumor sample is much smaller, but also it offers a faster turnaround time. It's just simply because it's a different testing technology. So that answer that question. Stewardship, the second part for this question is also very important, because when you give the specimen out to an external laboratory, you do not have control of the tissue anymore. The external laboratory can do you literally do not know what happened when you send a specimen out. As opposed to when we were doing the internal testing, we know how much tissue we are testing. We know that if the patient needs other subsequent additional tests, either it's immuno or other molecular tests, we know how much tissue we need to conserve. We know how much tissue we can do in the subsequent round for immuno. All those kind of questions, are not possible when you send the specimen out to the external laboratory. Of course, in terms of cost, if you do it internally, it's much, much cheaper. Also, in terms of the QA, the quality control, we have a very, very rigorous practice. Every single case that we perform the internal NGS, all the results are logged in our database. These patients, whenever they have their either repeat testing internally, or patient have their sample sent to an external vendor, either to a larger comprehensive panel or even with a liquid biopsy, when those results came back, we actually cross-reference to patient's prior sample. This is our way to make sure that we are not missing any mutation, and also if there's any mutation that pop up or that's reported, we actually retroactively go back to the original data. We'll dig up the original NGS data, and we will specifically query such mutation to see whether the mutation were present or not in the initial biopsy.
So then, at what point in the diagnostic pathway should comprehensive genomic profiling be initiated for patients with suspected or confirmed non-small cell lung cancer? And how do you tend to avoid delays in treatment while ensuring biomarker completeness?
Hi, I'm Monica Piravali, one of the medical oncologists at Largo Kaiser, with a special interest in thoracic oncology. So in terms of, at what point do we actually do comprehensive genomic profiling? For non-small cell lung cancer, we tend to check next-gen sequencing for all cases, all stages, because now we have data to support neoadjuvant chemotherapy, immunotherapy. So we want to make sure that there's no mutations in which immunotherapy is contraindicated. And of course, all stage 4 cancers are also checked. And in terms of which ones we would consider sending out, mostly we rely on our in-house NGS, but there are some complex cases with, cancers of unknown origin where we do need an external lab to run cancer of unknown origin, profiling, as well as, if there's any clinical trial that we're considering, then we tend to use a more centralized lab to meet the trial criteria. And if there's any discordant cases where, we're clinically suspecting that the patient has a mutation, but our in-house NGS does not show a mutation, we tend to look at the send-out testing to make sure that the results are concordant.
So then, from biopsy to report, what are the key steps pathologists and oncologists can take to maximize tissue adequacy and ensure successful testing, especially in small biopsies or cytology specimens?
I will talk about the pathology part, and then Archana, maybe you can talk about the oncology part. Yes. So yeah, so then for I think this is a concerted effort. Everybody has to, everybody play an important role to make sure that every patient, can get their tissue profile and with maximum amount of information that's needed for oncology to make the most informed decision. on the pathology part, I think importantly, like there are two things. Number one, we need to educate the pathologist. Starting 2.5, actually about 3 years ago, when we started our internal NGS testing, we went through multiple rounds of education, you know, a teaching session with our pathologist. And then again, we emphasize to the pathologist that now when you make the diagnosis, not only when you receive a specimen, not only are you making a diagnosis of non-small cell carcinoma with this lung adeno or lung squamous cell carcinoma, but you need to be very, very conscious to know that, you know, more likely than not, like that tiny bit of tissue will be needed to do NGS. So the pathologists need to know that they need to learn that they should not perform 500 immunohistochemical stains, you know, just to get the diagnosis. They need that, if they cannot make the diagnosis, they should stop after 2 or 5 immunohistochemical stains. Otherwise, you know, they will waste all the tissue, and then oncologists will be very, very unhappy. The second thing is the protocol. So whenever we receive the specimen from the IR or from our intervention pulmonologist, we split the sample in such a way that a small portion of the sample is put up front. They are separated into 2 different cassettes. The first cassette has smaller amount of tissue, and in that that amount of tissue is there for the pathologist to perform immunohistochemical workup. But in the second cassette is where we have the bulk of the specimen, and that cassette is always reserved for molecular testing.
Tony, I'll take over the oncologist question part. Hi, everyone. I am Archana Jadhav. I'm one of the medical oncologists with Kaiser. I practice in Tysons, Virginia. So when a patient comes to me and I am faced with a scenario where I feel that, for example, let's say a patient has a pleural effusion and the cytology sample is going to be limited. So what I do is, in that scenario, I go back to my pathologist and I ask them, do you have adequate cancer cells to perform the required NGS? So promptly reaching out to pathology and finding out if they have adequate tissue or no is a first step that we do. The second step is we reach out to our IR. Also, when they are performing biopsies, we do let them know that we want to send the sample for next generation sequencing. So make sure you get adequate sample. And in case I already know that the cytology specimen, the pleural fluid cytology specimen, for example, is not going to yield a result, then I go to our interventional radiologist and initiate a prompt biopsy of a second site. That way, we are not wasting time between the diagnosis and the initiation of treatment, especially in patients in whom targeted testing and targeted treatment will be beneficial.
Diving a little bit further, how should clinicians approach increasingly complex molecular reports, such as those that do list co-mutations, variants of unknown significance, or tumor mutational burden?
Whether it's an external lab or our in-house NGS, all mutations that have therapeutic implications, you know, we do get a treatment options listed as part of our report. But anything that's, you know, variant of unknown significance or anything that does not have any therapeutic options, we don't tend to make any treatment decisions with that information at that time. But, you know, should the patient have cancer progression after a year or two, most of us do tend to re-biopsy and run you know, another next gen sequencing. And if at that time these two mutations get reclassified for, or there's a new therapeutic target, then that does get included in our report. Again, both if we were to do it in-house versus using an external lab.
And what frameworks help translate these findings into actionable treatment decisions?
You know, having that practice of re-biopsying at every point of progression, I think is very helpful. And at some point, we do reach out to our academic colleagues to look for clinical trial opportunities, which again, sometimes these co-mutations that don't already have targetable options may be available as part of a clinical trial. So using our academic center partners, looking for clinical trials is another way we ensure that, you know, we make actionable treatment decisions.
If I may also add a couple points. So the biomarkers that are especially using lung as an example, newer and more biomarkers are being offered and listed on NCCN. And also we do keep the pathologists do keep a very, very close eye on the new biomarkers that are approved by FDA. And one of the ways that we track those new approval is actually from OnLife. We are all subscriber to the newsletter. So whenever FDA announce or release a new approval, that is something that we should take very, very we do keep track of. So for example, so when a while ago, sorry, I cannot remember the date. So when FDA made a new approval based for non-small cell without EGFR mutation, but with c-MET overexpression, what we do is that we actually go back to our lung cancer log, where we query our database to see, hey, of all the cancer samples that we have profiled so far, are there any cases that have MEK amplification? Even if those cases that have even just intermediate level of amplification. By the way, if it's high level amplification, those cases would have been flagged, and then a notification to the order oncologist would have been made. But for intermediate or even somewhat low level of the amplification, what we do is we would then reach out to the oncologist and say, hey, there is this new FDA approval for MET overexpressions that's tested by c-MET immunohistochemical stain. These cases may have may be possible. It may be possible for these kids to have overexpression. Are you thinking about using this particular therapy for this patient? And if that answer is yes, then we will retrieve that sample from our archive, and we do the c-MET immunohistochemistry. And again, I think these come back to the fact that having the testing internally, we know where the tissues is, we know how much tissues left, and therefore, if we want to add on any additional testing because of new approval, we can readily do so.
So you mentioned MET, and we now also have an approval for HER2. Beyond the established targets of EGFR, ALK, ROS1, and BRAF, which newer or less commonly tested biomarkers are becoming clinically relevant, and how should practices decide what to include in their in-house panels?
The two major biomarker are that we look very, very carefully here is actually HER2 and c-MET. And with HER2, we are very, very conscious because with HER2, the approval is actually based on pan tumor trial, the Destiny 2, which is for in HER2, and then the eligibility is made based on HER2 immunohistochemistry results. not NGS or FISH results. Now, this is a practice in my group because when we look at that that approval, what we know is that NGS testing is a population-based testing. In other words, like when you mix all the tumor cells in that biopsy sample and you run the NGS testing, if there is any intratumoral heterogeneity, in other words, if 5 out of 100 tumor cells that you tested has overexpression, your NGS test will not be able to pick up ERBB2 amplification. Therefore, in our practice, because it, again, HER2 immunohistochemical stain is an internal assay that's readily available to us. So what we do is because in HER2 is such a big biomarker. It's a therapy that's already available. That our oncologists order. We often always run HER2 immunohistochemical stain in addition or in parallel to NGS. And again, as long as in the biopsy setting, if we see 5 tumor cells in a cluster that have a HER2 of overexpression, it doesn't matter how the rest 95% of tumor cells look like, that patient will be eligible for in HER2 therapy in the second line and on setting. And then the same thing for CMET. For CMET, this is an immunohistochemical stain that is not available internally. So what we do is we look to our NGS, which we are able to look at the MAD amplification level. Now, oncologists, we will tell oncologists, if this tumor does not have EGFR mutation, then, if you are interested or if you need to know whether this tumor has CMET overexpression, let us know. We know how much tissue we still have in the archive. We will send for it. And then the other thing is if the tumor has MAP amplification, doesn't matter how high the level is, we will, again, reach out to the oncologist. And then if this is applicable or if they're thinking about that therapy, then we will send the tissue out for CMET immuno.
And last question, I'll group these two together. What does an effective collaboration model between pathologists, oncologists, and molecular labs look like in practice? And how can tumor boards or molecular case conferences be leveraged to improve interpretation, communication, and patient outcomes?
At Kaiser, what we do is that the patient first comes to either the primary care doctor or the urgent care or the pulmonologist, and they reach out to oncology asking for our guidance as to what should be, what kind of scans the patient should get. And our pulmonologists are great that once they order the biopsy and they also order the in-house NGS. So this is making the system very efficient so that by the time the patient comes to see us oncologists, we are already informed that the patient is on a schedule. If the primary care has not ordered, the primary cares usually don't order the NGS testing, but they inform us and we order the NGS testing ahead of time. So by the time the patient comes to see us, we already have within a week, we have all the information needed to treat the patient. And I have already, in that 1 week time frame, I reach out to pathology and Tony will guide me if there are any other tests that I need to order on the biopsy. So I go ahead and do that. So this way, we are able to expedite patient care. And I think we are able to efficiently communicate since we have a common system where all the records are present. So it's been very successful. It's been a very successful collaboration.
In terms of already having a multidisciplinary approach, even before the patient comes to us as oncology, because they've already seen pulmonary, if appropriate, they've already been referred to thoracic surgery, radiation, and so on and so forth. But you know, other complex cases where we want to collaborate at the same time and review the imaging together, we do use our general tumor board. And although at this time we don't have a disease-specific tumor board, you know, we can, whether it's within our department or, you know, something to consider for everybody else, is presenting all new cases in a multidisciplinary tumor board. Again, if the resources in that institution are able to provide a disease-specific tumor board, that would be another great way to collaborate and making sure the patients are getting a uniform treatment plan.
Finally, if I can add a couple good example or like scenario. So in our tumor board, I typically am the pathologist who attend the tumor board. So if there are any molecular related questions, you know, like I will be right there to answer the questions. And the tumor board is also an important venue where we discuss, you know, difficult or complex cases. So a couple scenario that molecular is really, really helpful. It include number one, when patient presented with two lung nodules, right? Clinically, it's always important to know whether those are two different lung primary, or is one a metastasis of the other, because that's going to affect the staging, and then the prognosis is drastically different. So two class of, to make such distinction, the morphology and immunohistochemical work can only go so far. So the pathologist's job, my job at that time will be to stand in front of the tumor board and say, hey, I have done the in-house NGS testing on these two tumors. They show two different mutation profile. Specifically, when I look at the tumor number one, I don't see the mutation that I saw in tumor two. Conversely, when I look at the tumor two, number two, I don't see the mutation that I detected in tumor one in this tumor. So these are two different lung adenocarcinoma. So then you can then the oncologist can then have very, very high confidence to treat the patient because as two distinct primaries. The other thing is also different very uncommon presentation. I remember there was a recent case where patient presented with a lung nodule and then there's also a colon mass. And then the colon mass was called most consistent with the lung adeno, and it takes a lot of it caused a lot of anxiety on everybody's part, because to have a single metastasis from the lung two cecum is really, really uncommon. However, what we are able to do is in addition to immunohistochemical workup, we are able to show that the tumor from the lung nodule and then the tumor in the cecum, they show identical mutation profile. Again, so that is, even no matter how uncommon that is, we have molecular evidence to support that this is the same tumor, and therefore you oncologist, it's uncommon presentation, but then there it is, you know, you don't argue with the molecular results.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.